Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
My name is Fred. I'm the lead pastor here, and I'll be speaking to you for a bit this morning. I want to start with a question. What is it that you want for Christmas? And don't give me any of that, like, peace on earth stuff. Like, what do you really want? I remember when I was about 9 and 10, 11, I was reading these books, and I was introduced to them from school. I've never been able to find them since, but it was about this kid, and he was an inventor, and he was always inventing crazy things. And in one of the books, he got this electricity set, and he did all kinds of wild and crazy things. Another book, he got a chemistry set. And so for 2 years, two Christmases, I think, in a row, I asked for, like, the nerdiest Christmas presents ever. I asked for, like, the electricity set the 1 year. Next year, I asked for the chemistry set. And I was so excited because I got them, right? And it was really cool. The electricity set, I don't think it really ever worked at all, kind of. And the chemistry set, like, it worked, but I wasn't able to make anybody invisible, like the kid in the book. I wasn't able to build a laser with the other one. And so as much as they were exactly what I wanted, they weren't what I wanted. I think that happens a lot. Even when we get stuff that we want, it doesn't always fulfill all the hopes and expectations that we get from those gifts. I think the only exception to that is when you get kind of my age, you have a nostalgia for the old gifts you used to get. I think at Best Buy right now, you can get, like, an Atari 2600 loaded with 150 games or something like that. It's like $70. Like, the original one was like $300 of money back then. I couldn't imagine the inflation value of that today. But I think in life, our two greatest disappointments, we have two greatest disappointments, and the first one is not getting what we want. I found over time, when people over time get upset with the church, us specifically, and they leave for whatever reason, most often, in fact, probably every time, it's for some reason they didn't get what they wanted. And it happens. It happens in life. It's disappointed. And I think the second great disappointment we experience in life is when we get what we want, and it turns out to be not what we wanted. That's it. Those are the two things that disappoint us. Sometimes we want things we didn't know we wanted until it happens, like, say, good health or financial stability. And sometimes we do get what we want, and it takes years for us to realize there's something missing. And that's what's behind the midlife crisis, okay? So I know more men go through this, I think, than women, but you hit 45, 50, and I've lived my life, and I haven't achieved those goals. Like, I've never been a jet fighter pilot. And like, there's just, I'm disappointed. But there are other guys, they accomplish everything they wanted and more, and they fall, crash, and burn harder. Because they go, I've accomplished everything I've set out to accomplish, but is that it? Is that really it? See, we have needs that we don't even know that we have, or the deepest needs that we have that seem to give context and meaning to all the other things that we actually do get. All the other things that we enjoy, at least for a time, the needs that go beyond the temporary thrills and affirmations of Facebook likes, you know? Or the things that seem more important than the weekly outrages online that usually revolve around whatever Trump said lately or whatever somebody is saying about Trump lately. And I think we have hints in our life that point to something more, and we don't always recognize them as hints. But there are hints that there's something beyond. When you experience transcendent music. You ever have a music experience? You go, wow, it was like time collapsed and expanded all at once. Everybody loves music. And I think everybody has that kind of experience where you go, there's a certain kind of music you identify with, and it just seems to expand your awareness. We have that in great art. And I think fewer people identify with visual art or dance than they do with music. But art and beauty and music seems to point to something beyond us. When we have relationships with one another, the kind of relationship where, again, time seems not to matter. It's almost like you're experiencing eternity in the moment when you have, I don't mean the relationships that are the ones that suck or the ones that are, you know, broken and like there's always problems, but you have the times when your relationships are working and you go, that seems to indicate that there's something more than just matter and energy. And I think at a very basic level, we have a desire for things to be better that can't be explained just by the laws of physics. See, our default framework of understanding since the Enlightenment, okay, the late 1700s, early 1800s, our default understanding is the best understanding we have is that everything is made up of matter and energy and everything follows physical laws. This is how we understand things to be. Wade was telling me once a few years ago, actually it would have been a lot more than a few years ago now, he was watching a special on A&E, and it was about the history of the world, and they were looking at the progress of mankind. And in that progress of mankind, there was only one lens they were looking through, technology. How technology has impacted us over time. And it was like there wasn't even another option. The only reason we are where we are today is because of technology. Really? Is that the only lens we can see? But that's our default framework of understanding. So we live in a culture that the view is kind of reductionist. You want to break everything down to the smallest possible laws and rules, and we explain behavior according to biology and chemistry, and we explain interactions according to physics. But where in that scheme do you fit love? How do you explain beauty? How do you explain altruistic relationships and behavior? I mean, are these just happy accidents of biology? Some people would say they're actually illusions. Yeah, we can explain the chemical reactions that go on when you feel love or compassion or whatever, but we can't explain why that exists to begin with. We can't explain, I mean, you can explain it away, but we can't understand it through a naturalistic framework. We can't grasp it. And yet, okay, this is one thing I think that matters. Those are the things that seem to make life worthwhile. It's the relationships working properly. It's the beauty. It's the art. It's the transcendent moments. You go, well, that's what gives meaning to life. And we have a hard time explaining that through a naturalistic bent. We go day to day, and we tend not to think about these things at all. We just go. We're pursuing goals. Many times we're not even aware of the goals we're pursuing. We're kind of joining the path of least resistance and following the goals that everybody else is. We have a path kind of laid out for us, and in that path, there's a pressure of the life you should be living, the expectations you should have, and the way you should be living in order to achieve those. The kind of life you should be living, and there are an infinite number of voices that are telling you what those things should be and how to achieve them. We have all these pressures. I can think of, here's one area, okay? Your diet. You're eating too many carbs. No, you're not eating enough carbs. You should be eating just protein. No, shouldn't be eating protein. Watch the fat. No, you need to have fat in your diet. And there's contradictory advice all the time. And that's just one area. Is it gluten? Is it probiotics? What's the next thing? It's your gut. Right? And the things you pay attention to, and there's so many voices, and how do you even make a decision? Are we going to spend all of our time researching that stuff in order to make the right decision so we're living the right life? We have influence from Dr. Phil, from Dr. Oz, from Dr. Ho, from Dr. Bernstein, and all these people are telling all these different things. And I think typically people just pick and choose what seems to be right at the time, but we're still living that pursuit of a goal that we don't even know what it is. Choosing between all these people that say it's the correct way and they contradict one another. I want to point to a really old text, and it's a text that is written by one of the earliest followers of Jesus, and he gives us Jesus' words, and the book is named after him. The book is called Matthew. And he said, this is what Jesus says, and Jesus makes this public statement. All the books in the Bible are divided up by numbers just to find stuff easy. And it says in Matthew 11:28, Jesus said, come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Do you carry heavy burdens? A burden, it's a weight. All of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. A yoke would be something that, like a slab of wood that's formed to fit over the shoulders. There's two kinds, one to connect two oxen or horses to pull a carriage or a plow or something. In other words, people would wear them, you still do in some parts of the world, to distribute the weight of something heavy that you're carrying. So you put it over your shoulders and maybe hang two buckets of water. It's a lot easier to carry that weight with your whole body than just with your arms. So that's what a yoke is. Jesus says, take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. We all carry all kinds of burdens. We're weighed down by pressures and goals and intentions and concerns. And I don't know if you're familiar with the U of T psychologist Jordan Peterson. He says, carrying a burden is what gives meaning to life. So he would complain, he would argue that there are people that would strive to eliminate burdens, clear the path of life, make things easy, equal opportunity and equal outcome for all people. And he says, when that happens, you actually have nothing to do. There's no burdens. There's nothing that, if there's anything to do, it's not worthwhile. To live a life that's meaningful, worthwhile, you have to find, he would say, the largest, most heavy thing you can find and do that with your life to make your life better. That's what the meaning of life is. Now, he's responding against this idea that life should not be difficult for anyone. He says, life is difficult. Grab it, carry it. It's not a new idea. There was an ancient Greek story about a king. He was a king of the city of Corinth before it was even called Corinth. And this is a Greek legend, okay? It's not a true story. But he was somewhat of a trickster. Actually, you would even look, depending on which version, there's a whole bunch of versions of a whole bunch of Greek myths. And he was actually a downright evil person. And so he would murder people to his own ends, and he even tried to trick the gods. So when he died, he was cast into Hades, and again, different versions of the stories where he kind of got out and was put back in. And so as punishment for all of his trickery and his presumption against the gods, Zeus cursed him in Hades. Now, Hades would be the Greek version of hell, but it's not like hell like you imagine it, okay? It's basically a resting place for... The best way to describe it is ghosts. It's not necessarily a place of torment. It's a place of kind of ghost-like existence. It's not an ideal place. It's not a place of reward. It's just a resting place for the dead. But for this guy, Sisyphus, he was not just resting. He was given a task. He was mandated with a task to take this massive boulder and carry it up a mountain. And so this is what he would do. He'd start at the bottom, carry the boulder, and bring it up the mountain, and then Zeus engineered it so when he got to the top, the boulder would roll all the way down again. And he would have to do it again. And this is his fate for eternity. Pick up the boulder, carry it to the top. Pick up the boulder, carry it to the top. There was a philosopher in the 20th century, one of our most intelligent philosophers, actually quite a depressing guy, Albert Camus, French guy. And he starts off one of his books, and the first page it says, you know, the biggest question we are left with is whether or not to commit suicide. And then he addresses that question for the rest of the book. In a different essay that he wrote, he uses this model, this story of Sisyphus, to describe reality in the 20th century. And I think it would apply in the 21st century. He's coming out of the modern age. The modern age was an age of optimism, progress, evolution towards the future, the march towards utopia, and the philosophers were smart enough to realize this is not working before all of the rest of us did and became pessimistic postmoderns. And he says, life is like Sisyphus carrying this rock up the mountain, and he was one of those philosophers that is living with the assumption that there's no God, this is all we have. And when you follow that road, you it doesn't take too long before you come to the point that there is actually no ultimate meaning in life. So life is just about carry your burden pointlessly and indefinitely. Carry your burden. It's just a rock. Just carry your burden. And this is in this whole essay, and I don't want to discredit Albert Camus by giving you like the short version, but that's what you're going to get today. At the end of that essay, he says this phrase. He says that something like it's translated from French. So he says, this task should be enough to fill your heart. But his last words in the essay is, we must imagine Sisyphus happy. Wow. Wow, so the point of life is to carry a meaningless burden and imagine yourself happy. That's the antidote to suicide. Because there's really no meaning, just imagine yourself happy. This is postmodernism. That's kind of at the root of this. The meaning of life is that's it. Now, when Jesus was saying these words, take my yoke, take my burden upon you, he's not talking in a postmodern context, but we can look at what he meant there and apply it to today directly. So when Jesus says, take my yoke, okay, that was actually a technical term. He's not handing out bars of wood with ropes attached to them. In that culture, the word yoke was a technical term. I don't want to use the word religion because religious is different the way we understand it today than what it was then. I'll explain that in a sec. But a yoke was an interpretation of the law. It was a package of interpretation. And there were competing interpretations. You know, like we have all the pressures from the people telling us different things. Well, they had all different kind of pressures then, and they tended to be focused on how to live out Jewish law. And it wasn't about being a good Jewish citizen. This is where our Enlightenment categories start to fall apart. Because we look at our you know, our work life and our secular life, and we look at our religious life or spirituality or whatever as kind of an add-on, and it's private, it's nobody else's business, and it's between you and God or the universe or whatever, and whatever works for you works for you. In that culture, it wasn't like that at all. Their nation had an identity that they were in a national relationship with God, with the creator of the universe, in a way that no other nation was. They didn't really care about what all the other pagans were doing. In fact, religion in that world, outside of Judah or Judea or Israel, religion had very little to do with morality or behavior. Religion only had to do with placating the gods. You get what you want, make a sacrifice, and hopefully the god, you know, decides in your favor. That's what religion was. And if you lived in a pagan city, you would identify with the patron god of your city, and everybody would work together to represent that god and keep the god or goddess happy. That's what religion was. Morality, how you behave, is the realm of philosophy. The philosophers talked about what is the best way to live and being good and not being evil and all that other stuff. But in Israel, the Jews, it was all wrapped up together. It was all of life. See, they understood themselves to have a unique covenant or contract with the creator of the universe and a mandate to worship him with their whole identity. And if they did it correctly, God would elevate them to preeminent status in the world, and everyone would look at them and go, well, that's how you're supposed to live. So they were not out to kind of spread their religious beliefs to everyone else. They were out to do it properly for themselves, and God would act on their behalf. But there were all kinds of different opinions about how to do it. And see, if you do it wrong, you could jeopardize the future of the whole nation. So when there were competing ideas, these were crucial. So if we were all living in that day, and I believe I have the correct interpretation of the law, and everybody else is doing it wrong, you could actually be a bigger threat or enemy to me than the pagans. Because you could incur God's punishment on us. So there were four basic schools of thought. And I don't want to make it sound like these were all like isolated, right? Today we talk about, you know, liberal left-wing and right-wing and conservative. Those categories did not apply at all back then. Those were not categories. So that's how people tend to group themselves today, and there's all kinds of other categories. Well, they had four basic categories and four basic interpretations of the law. So the first one was the Sadducees. The Sadducees were the powerhouses. They were the ones who had political power. And they were very concerned about maintaining status quo, which meant even affirming their relationship with Rome, who were an oppressive, occupying force. Why? Why would they maintain that? Because they were the ones in power, so why would you change that? Okay, that's a basic kind of generalization. You had the Pharisees, they are big players in the New Testament. The Pharisees believed that the best way to live out God's purpose in this agreement with God is to keep the law perfectly. And this is what they would strive for. And they spent a lot of time talking about how to do that. You had the zealots. When I was younger, I used to think, well, the zealots were the non-religious violent people. No, that's not the case at all. They were the religious violent people. See, because if you want to maintain your purity before God, you aggressively deal with the people who are not. And if you have to martyr yourself in doing that, that will count in your favor in the age to come. And I also don't want to make it seem like the zealots were the only violent ones, because they were all prepared to be violent. A little historical note, the pursuit of peace is, at the time in that area, was a distinctly Christian thing. It's not like everybody's going, oh, we're all religious. That didn't become a Jewish thing until after the two very disastrous, unsuccessful revolts against Rome. They kind of said, we got to change the way we're doing things. And then the last one was the Essenes. The Essenes said, we live separate from corrupt society. We're going to camp out in the desert somewhere and wait for God to come in and deliver everything, and then we'll step in and clean everything up. So those were the four general schools of thought, and there was a lot of room to mix between them. And there was a lot of pressure for people to understand what was the right way and do it the right way. And among the popular people, the Pharisees were the ones, because they were the ones at the same level as everyone else. They weren't power mongers, and they weren't out in the desert somewhere, and they weren't, you know, in hiding with secret cabals, assassinating people. They were the ones that were living among people and telling them how to live. This is what God wants you to do. And if we do it properly, then God will come and elevate us and all of that. Jesus actually criticizes them much later in the same book. He criticizes them and says, you lay heavy burdens on all the people and you do nothing to help them accomplish it. See, it's one thing to live a spiritual life when you have the support of the synagogue, the local community, and you are funded and all of that. But when you're a peasant and you're struggling to eke out survival and you're farming and you're living subsistence-based life, it's really hard to keep all the rules and survive at the same time. So people struggled with this. How do I accomplish what God wants? How do I be those right people? And Jesus accuses the religious people, and they were, among the common people, they were the most highly respected. And he accuses the most highly respected religious people, saying, you judge other people, and you don't help them. You lay a heavy burden of law upon them, and you don't do anything to help them. I read this recently. It was a statement. I can't remember who said it, but they say that in this day and age, in the 21st century Western world, the church faces cold contempt. That was the phrase he used, cold contempt, in a culture that believes it has outgrown organized religion in general and Christianity in particular. And I think that is true because we have been guilty of the same thing. Spent a long time telling everybody else how to live, judging them when they don't get it right, and doing nothing to help them do it. Subject to the same criticism that Jesus gave the highest respected religious leaders of that time. And in that context, Jesus says, come to me, all of you who are weary, all of you who carry heavy burdens. I have a yoke. I have an interpretation of the law. I have a means to live that is better and that is still true today. With all the pressures that we have, with all of the trajectories that are dumped upon us that we many times just engage in without thinking, pursuing financial security and pursuing raising our kids and trying to get elevated in our workplace. Why? Well, so you get a better paycheck. And going and going and going and going. To what end? For what? Well, so I can retire. And then what? Then what? Sit around. Life is more than that. Jesus says, come to me if you're weary. I have a whole different way of living. And the core of the story, if you're familiar with Christianity at all, the core of that story is Jesus himself going to the cross, being subjected to humiliation and torture and death. Why? To make available that life. It's a completely different way, because where other people would point fingers and do nothing to help, Jesus himself went and did what needed to be done, that somehow this life is now available to us. I'd love to spend 3 hours going into the how But that's a long, complicated thing, and sometime in the new year, we're actually going to do a whole series on that, how that actually works. But there is a transformed life, which is actually a restoration of the original life we originally intended to have. You go all the way back to the beginning. God creates humanity to be in relationship with him and to bear his image in the universe, and that became broken, and Jesus says, I'm going to make it happen. Not through effort and law-keeping, but through inside-out transformation, defeating the evil that continually dominates us and releasing God's spirit to humanity and a restoration of that original intention. Now, you may be listening there going, yeah, okay, well, I've heard Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz and all the other doctors, and is this just another option out of many? Well, yeah, you could look at it that way. At some point, sometimes I want to ask people, how's it working for you? It sounds kind of rude, but it's true. Like, how's it working for you? Here's an offer. And how do you engage that trajectory? And I can't prove it to you. We could have long conversations about, evidence and all that other stuff. But the best way to be exposed to it is to hear somebody else's story. And we have a whole ton of people here that have experienced that life-changing trajectory into a life that is meaningful and worthwhile, a burden that is worth carrying, that we are actually assisted in the carrying of. And I want to share with you a story this morning, and actually I'm going to let them share it because we're going to show it to you on video. So here's a story of somebody that has engaged that complete trajectory, change of trajectory. Jesus says, come to me if you are weary, if you're carrying a heavy burden, take my burden. He says this to everyone, and it's not dependent on your skin color, your ethnic background, or your religious upbringing. His offer is for everyone. Jesus shows us what the creator of the universe looks like, his intent, his actions. He demonstrates us and he makes that life available for us. A whole new trajectory, a whole new way of living. And how do you do it? How do you jump into that life? Well, it's as simple as ABC. It starts with A, acknowledge or admit your need for him. What I'm doing right now is not working for me. Getting all the pressure, I'm carrying all the weight, it's not working for me. I've seen those hints. I've experienced some kind of transcendence in music, in art, in relationships, in the desire for something better. I need that. B stands for belief. Accept that what Jesus has done has made the way available for you. And maybe you have barriers for that. Maybe you say, well, I've seen a lot of really bad versions of Christianity. Well, okay, that's fine, but Jesus still makes the offer. He's not offering us a religion, he's offering us a life. Maybe you think, does that mean I have to check my brains because I might have some doubts? Yeah, that's fine. You don't have to disregard science to be a follower of Jesus. Maybe you think that if God even exists, he's distant or irrelevant, or even worse, he's despicable because there's pain in the world. Yeah, there is pain in the world because God's plan is not complete yet. He's still working to overcome it, and he's inviting us into that process so we partner with him in dealing with the problems of the world. Whatever your barriers are, you can still come. If you've ever gotten married, if you ever bought a house, if you ever had a child, guaranteed you did not know what you were getting into before you did any of those things. But you make the leap because you see the potential is worth it. It's worth the risk. A is admit, acknowledge. B is believe. And C is commit. You make the choice. You do something to affirm, my old life is behind. I'm stepping into this new life. ABC, admit, believe, commit. How do you do that? You have to do something to respond. There has to be something you do that affirms that this is a life change decision you are making today. And the easiest way, or the best way that we can offer here at Crosslands is to connect with us. We have a website you can access through any smart device, crosslands.live. And just fill in your contact information. There's a checkbox there. I am deciding to follow Jesus today. There's also a second one. I want to find out more. And we will respond to you if you do that. If you don't have a smart device or you struggle with that, there is like the old-fashioned paper version of that. We have them at the back, the connection cards get connected. We have them in the lobby. We have them at the back there. And just fill out your contact information, check the box, hand it in at the information desk, and we will respond to you. We'll get a hold of you to allow you to take those steps to move forward into this new life. I'm going to make myself available after the service at the front here. If you want to make this decision, you want somebody to pray with, then I'll be here for that. I'm going to close the service in prayer, but when the service is done, we always welcome people to stick around and have those relationships moments that are so key to being human. We always challenge people to find one person you've never met before and have a meaningful conversation. We just ask you to do that in the lobby because we make Theater One a prayer room. So if this is a commitment that you're wrestling through, stick around and pray. If you have kids in the kids program, they'll be going for another 15 minutes. We do that to facilitate this. If you are a follower of Jesus and you find that you are carrying weights, carrying burdens that you shouldn't be carrying, stick around here and pray and give that up. And we have people that will be providing a music to play over you, sing over you, to facilitate an environment. You can pray by yourself, you can pray with a friend, you can pray with your small group or family members. I just invite you to stay and pray. Jesus invites us to come. Let me pray for you now. Father, Creator of heaven and earth, who loves us more than we love ourselves. In spite of everything that you know of us, you love us completely. You made us to love us. Father, you have a life for us that's beyond our imagining. I thank you for the invitation to come, and for those that are right now struggling with that decision, Father, I pray that you would remove the obstacles and barriers. Father, break through the wounds and the hurt and even the doubts. Father, welcome new people into your family today. I ask that you would bring that freedom, that you would lift the weight this morning, that it would be felt, it would be known, it would be experienced this morning. And Father, help us to effectively live out your life, the life you want to live through us as we live in partnership with you. And we continually hand ourselves over to you to allow you to fill us and empower us and revitalize us. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.